Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Queen of All Witcheries, A Biography of the Goddess, by Jack Chanik, narrated by Leslie Howard. Publisher's note: this audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type Queen of All Witcheries into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page. Then, under the Supplemental Content section, please enter the access code VEIL, V-E-I-L, and then click the Unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All exercises and rituals referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Disclaimer: some of the exercises provided in this book involve working with herbs, some of which are potentially poisonous. Always exercise extreme caution when using toxic herbs. The recipes provided here are tested for safety, but please do not experiment on your own unless you have significant experience with herbalism. You can kill yourself if you don't know what you're doing. Likewise, if you have medical conditions such as epilepsy or pregnancy that are contraindicated with the use of some herbs, please consult with a doctor before proceeding with any foray into herbalism. You will also find mentions of essential oils. Essential oils are potent. Use care when handling them. Always dilute essential oils before placing them on your skin, and make sure to do a patch test on your skin before use. Perform your own research before using an essential oil. Foreword. The practice of witchcraft, Wicca, and goddess worship has grown in recent years, which is wonderful. Unfortunately, the spread of misinformation and blurred lines between historical fact and modern fictional ideas has also exploded. Whilst I always encourage those new to the path to read everything they can get their hands on, it also comes with a warning that not everything found in books or on the internet is, for want of a better word, gospel. Reading books on witchcraft, Wicca, and deity from the birth of the modern Wiccan inception up to and including today is a very useful endeavor. But we need to remember that some of the information is perhaps a little sketchy, maybe not researched properly, or even just plucked from the air. My own style of the craft is miscellaneous, a pick and mix from many traditions and practices fused together to make my own unique pathway. And I believe that is how it should be, if it works for you. The problem lies in people promoting goddess worship practices or witchcraft ways as the old, original, or only way, without doing their homework. Social media doesn't help, with sometimes ridiculous memes full of misinformation being shared hundreds of times. We need people to check, to research, to investigate, and to fact-check before passing ideas, workings, or practices off as original or ancient. Actually, I don't think it matters if ways of working with the craft or goddess worship are ancient or modern, as long as they work for you. But I do believe it is important to know the source and history of them. I also believe it helps to know why you are doing something. Why does a ritual work that way? Why do we call upon the goddess for this or that? Why do we work with magical tools for such a purpose? Lots of whys, and it is important to have at least some sort of explanation. Why? Because it helps with our understanding of how magic works and what the reasons are for certain things. Whilst I do always trust my intuition, particularly in relation to working magic, it helps immensely to understand the foundations of the why. A lot of my own practice has come from reading about folk magic and historical documents. As a newcomer to the craft over 30 years ago now, I read a lot of the texts Jack references in this book. And I took them all as fact. They were textbooks to be taken as historically and factually correct. It took me a while before I realized that some of the information was a little bit off. Queen of all witcheries has shown me even more off areas than I realized. You never stop learning, that's for sure. We also find a lot of misunderstanding within areas of the craft and goddess worship. The Wiccan reed is a good example. Where did it originate from? And what was its original meaning and intent? I see so many people quoting it and using it as a disclaimer or excuse in ways far removed from the original use and meaning. If you use something such as the reed, does it not make sense to understand and know its origins? The old ways are not necessarily the right ways for everyone. As with all things, time moves forward and changes happen. It is fascinating to research and read how things were done originally or historically, but not everything translates easily to modern times. Sometimes things need to be tweaked, and that's a good thing, but we need to recognize that information has been brought up to date and not misrepresented as ancient. Queen of all witcheries includes some wonderful, updated modern rituals. We seem so focused on which goddess we work with and how many items we can fit on an altar to her that we forget to just be, to really feel her energy and presence in all things. You can have the biggest altar, the most candles, and every incense blend and crystal, but unless you open up and feel her energy, it is all pointless decoration. Perhaps we all need a reminder on occasion to make those connections, to just open ourselves to the energy of the day, the place, and the goddess. She does not judge. She does not discriminate. She just is. Jack Chanik has researched, discussed, and covered in great detail all the previously mentioned subjects and a great deal more. And he's given answers to the questions that needed to be answered. This book is a much-needed tome of knowledge and a resource for everyone on a witchcraft, Wiccan, or goddess worship pathway. It makes for a fascinating and, more importantly, enlightening resource. Knowledge is power. Rachel Patterson, High Priestess, Witch, and author of many books on the craft, such as Curative Magic, The Triple Goddess, and Witchcraft into the Wilds. Preface. In 2016, there was a full moon on the night of the summer solstice. This is a relatively rare astronomical phenomenon. The last time it happened was in 1948, and it won't happen again until 2062. At that time, I was a fledgling witch living in New York City. I had already begun training with the group that was later to initiate me into the Gardnerian tradition of Wicca, but I hadn't yet fully committed to the initiatory path. Nonetheless, I wanted to mark the occasion, so I did a short ritual prior to sunset. I filled a cup with fruit juice, wreathed it in flowers, and left it on my windowsill to take in the light of the full moon. The plan was for me to leave the cup out overnight, then drink it the following morning, symbolically taking the power of the moon and the solstice into myself. That night, I had an experience that changed my life forever. There was a public screening of Ferris Bueller's Day Off happening in Bryant Park. I was in college at the time, working a summer job at the Bronx Zoo, and most of my friends had left New York for the summer, so I decided to go to the movie on my own. After I finished my little ritual, I took the subway down to Midtown Manhattan, found an unoccupied spot of grass, and settled in to watch the show. As the night wore on, the moon rose above the Manhattan skyline. As it crested over the top of the buildings behind me, the whole park was bathed in a gentle silver glow. I looked up to catch a glimpse of the moon above me, and there she was. a figure of a nude woman stretched across the night sky. Her skin was the color of freshly tilled soil. Her hair was braided through with white flowers, and she smelled of jasmine and copal. Her hands, raised high above her head, cradled the full moon between them, and her eyes shone silver. I was filled with an indescribable sense of awe. Seeing her that night in Bryant Park, I knew with absolute certainty that Wicca was the right religion for me. She didn't say anything. She didn't look at me. She was just there, regal and powerful, the queen of the heavens in all her glory. As Ben Stein droned out, "Bueller, Bueller," on the big screen, I was seized by a religious ecstasy that I had never experienced before. The rest of the world faded away. There was only her. In that moment, I committed myself to the goddess, and I have never looked back since. Introduction. If you spend much time around pagans and witches, regardless of your personal beliefs and practices, you will sooner or later hear people talking about the goddess. The use of the definite article can be confusing and even jarring. Don't pagans worship multiple goddesses? But more often than not, people are using the term to refer to one particular deity. Some people refer to her as the goddess because they think her true name is unknowable. Others know her privately by a secret name, but use the title to describe her in public. Still others believe that all the goddesses of world mythology are just different names and faces of one great goddess who transcends them all. So the name by which she's called doesn't matter. Who is this goddess? What do people say about her? Often she's described as a mother. She is variously described as the Great Mother, the Mother of the Universe, Mother Earth, or the Mother of us all. She is associated with the cycles of life: birth, youth, adolescence, adulthood, old age, death, and, for those who believe in it, reincarnation. She is understood to watch over, protect, and nurture humanity, and to offer a boundless, unconditional love. One author in the 20th century goddess feminism movement, Carol P. Christ, describes the goddess as the intelligent, embodied love that is the ground of all being. In this vein, the goddess is associated with love of all kinds. She is a deity not only of maternal love, but also of romantic, sexual, filial, fraternal, collegial, and friendly forms of love. All love is sacred to her. And as early Wiccan author Doreen Valiente notes, all acts of love and pleasure are rituals of the goddess. Sex and sexuality are honored and celebrated by the goddess, rather than being seen as sinful or shameful. But the choice not to have sex is just as sacred as the choice to have it. The human body is often described as sacred to the goddess, and everything people do joyfully with their bodies can be viewed as an act of celebration and worship in her honor. This connection extends beyond the realm of interpersonal love, and it applies to all forms of joy and beauty. The goddess rules over art, music, and poetry. She is a guide and inspiration for those seeking connection to something higher, in all its forms. Any expression of human creativity, be it through dance or through blacksmithing, is sacred to her. She is a patron of storytellers and craftspeople, of creativity and creation in all their forms. In the world, the goddess is seen as the immanent power of nature. People describe her as a goddess of the earth, the sea, or the stars. Wild animals and wild places are sacred to her, and her worshippers often choose to conduct rituals outdoors. These things are not merely symbols of the goddess. In many ways, they are the goddess herself. The earth is the body of the goddess, and by honoring the earth, pagans honor her directly. Because of the goddess's association with nature, many of her worshippers are vocal environmentalists, or they will seek to connect to her through gardening, hunting, herbalism, or similar activities. The goddess embodies a cyclical, non-linear understanding of time. Rather than progressing from a strict starting point to an end point, time is seen to ebb and flow in cycles of increase and decrease. This is seen in the stages of human life, but also in the life cycles of plants and animals, the flow of the tides, and the changing seasons of the year. All things rise and fall, come and go, without beginning or end, simply participating in a great cosmic dance. The quintessential symbol of the goddess's cyclical nature is the moon, which waxes and wanes every month. The moon begins as a crescent, grows until it is full, and then darkens again until it is renewed, representing the eternal cycle of life, death, and rebirth. As such, it is associated with the cyclical goddess, who is often depicted wearing a lunar crown on her brow. Through her associations with transformation and change, the goddess is also a patroness of magic. Not all pagans or goddess worshippers practice magic, but many do. For these, the goddess is a source of inspiration and power, enabling them to change themselves and the world around them. Many who worship the goddess call themselves witches, and a sizable portion of these practice the religion of Wicca in one form or another. The goddess, then, is not only a deity of nature and embodied love, she is a divine sorceress and queen of the witches. Finally, the goddess is not always depicted in isolation. Some, particularly members of the 20th century goddess feminism movement, worship the goddess exclusively, but others depict her as having a divine consort. Often this consort is imagined as a sun god to complement the moon goddess. He may variously be associated with hunting, agriculture, sex, death, and kingship. In Wicca, and traditions influenced thereby, this consort is frequently depicted with horns or antlers. Some people draw on a seasonal myth of the goddess and god. In this myth, the goddess gives birth to the sun god at the winter solstice. He grows through the spring and reaches maturity in the summer, when he becomes her consort. The two of them are married, and she conceives a child. Then, as autumn sets in, the god dies and is banished to the underworld, only to be reborn again when the goddess gives birth at the solstice. Not everyone likes or uses this myth, but it's widespread enough that you will likely encounter some version of it in the broader pagan community, so it's worth mentioning here. In addition to all of her own qualities, the goddess may sometimes also be understood through her relationship to a divine son and/or lover. Goddesses and the Goddess. Already, I have painted what I hope is a vivid picture of who the goddess is. However, there is a puzzle here. The worship of this goddess is a fairly modern phenomenon. She springs up with the rise of modern paganism in the 20th century, but prior to that, it is difficult to identify any one deity who is exactly like the figure I have just described, and who is associated with all of these elements. Motherhood. Love not limited to romantic love. The sacred body. Art and creativity, immanence in nature, cyclicality, the moon, transformation and magic, a horned or solar consort. This is not to say that she doesn't relate to ancient goddesses at all, quite the contrary. There are an abundance of deities in the ancient world who have traits in common with her. Demeter is the Corn Mother. Freya is a goddess of magic. Brigid watches over artists and craftsmen, and so on. Nonetheless, none of these deities is quite the same as the goddess I've described. Demeter has little to do with witchcraft or magic. Freya is not much interested in the cycles of the seasons. And Brigid is not a mother. If you go to an open pagan circle and someone invokes the goddess, they're probably not thinking of any of these deities or any other specific goddess from world mythology. Conversely, if you were to invite a devotee of Demeter, Freya, Brigid, Hecate, Amaterasu, or any other goddess to a ritual honoring that particular deity, and brought them instead to a rite for the goddess, you'd be likely to ruffle some feathers. For this reason, I employ a capitalization convention to distinguish the goddess from goddesses in general. When I am talking about the great goddess, whose particular name and associations I have detailed here, I capitalize the word. When, however, I am speaking about goddesses of pagan antiquity, I leave the word decapitalized. In a book about the goddess, the G word gets used quite a lot, and I think that making this typographical distinction helps keep clear when I am talking about her versus the various pagan deities who helped inspire the modern conception of her. I employ a similar convention with the word god. I will capitalize it if I am speaking of the god, who is the goddess's consort, but otherwise I leave it lowercase. Finally, the word pagan is capitalized when referring to contemporary religion, but decapitalized when talking about ancient paganism. I mentioned earlier that some people see all goddesses as different faces or aspects of one singular goddess. For these people, the distinction I am trying to draw here may feel arbitrary, incorrect, or forced. After all, if all these goddesses are different manifestations of the same goddess energy, then Demeter just is Freya, and Freya just is Brigid, and so on down the line. She may be known by different names in different circumstances, the same way someone might go by Catherine at work and Kate at home. But the same goddess underlies all those names, and all the different myths and rituals with which she is honored. This is a question of theology, and each person is going to have their own views on the matter. Some people believe that all goddesses are one goddess, and others believe that each goddess in world mythology is a unique individual who is metaphysically distinct from every other. These positions are known as soft polytheism and hard polytheism, respectively. Still, other people will take a stance somewhere in the middle, viewing deities as distinct beings that sometimes share a similar divine essence. I suppose one could call this stance semi-firm polytheism, if one wanted to categorize it. On the question of hard versus soft polytheism, I'll remain agnostic for the purposes of this book. My own views about deity are somewhere in the semi-firm camp, but one of the hallmarks of goddess worship and of paganism more broadly is that it is intimate, personal, and subjective. Everyone brings their own experience to the table, and no one has the authority to dictate anyone else's experience. I'm not in the business of telling people what they should or shouldn't believe about the nature of the gods. What I hope we can all agree on, regardless of theological perspective, is that the way people talk about the goddess today is unique. There are similarities with ancient paganism, but the goddess, as she is known today, is not quite identical to any figure from the ancient world. The worship of the goddess in the 20th and 21st centuries is not merely the continuation of any one goddess cult from pre-Christian times. It is a particular, new, special thing. The language used to describe the goddess, the features attributed to her, and the symbols associated with her, did not exist in quite this way at any point in the past, though there are similar elements scattered through world mythology. The goddess herself may be ancient and beyond time, but the modern cult of the goddess is just that, modern. the goddess in modern history. In this book, I'm going to explore the modern mythology of the goddess. I'll analyze the development of modern ideas about the goddess in order to better understand how the world ended up with the form of goddess worship found in paganism today. Along the way, I discuss famous witches, pagans, and ceremonial magicians who shaped the ritual and mythology of the goddess in the 20th century. Figures like Aleister Crowley, Dion Fortune, Gerald Gardner, Doreen Valiente, and Starhawk. However, my investigation will not be limited to practitioners. I will also introduce historians, folklorists, and anthropologists from the 19th and 20th centuries, whose ideas change the way people today think about paganism, the goddess, and the ancient world. Throughout this book, I'll explore the relationship between the present and pagan antiquity. What I aim to show is that this relationship is not static and fixed. It is eternally evolving, changing as we change. Modern-day practitioners see history through a glass darkly. Our view of the past is neither authoritative nor impartial. Much of the time, we look at history and see what we want to see or what we expect to see. Consequently, when thinking about the history of goddess worship, modern practitioners have to ask ourselves what people in the early days of the movement wanted and expected to see. This book will examine 19th and 20th century narratives about ancient paganism, witchcraft, and goddesses, because these narratives affected the movers and shakers of the modern goddess revival. My question has to be not only, what was ancient goddess worship really like, but what did people think ancient goddess worship was like? This is a hard question, and it can lead to some uncomfortable places. Many of the influential figures who shaped ideas in contemporary goddess worship were men, and that can be an awkward thing to reckon with in a religious tradition that focuses so much on women's voices and women's power. Moreover, I will claim that many commonly held ideas about the goddess, from her association with nature to the myth of her dying and resurrecting consort, are less ancient than they are sometimes imagined to be. Much of who the goddess is and how people today talk about her is rooted in post-industrial narratives about ancient paganism, more so than in ancient paganism itself. When I say that, it may feel threatening. In discussing the goddess, I am talking about a sacred and profound topic. It may sound like sacrilege, then, for me to say that many of the ideas associated with this timeless figure are modern in their origin. Situating the goddess at a particular moment in history may give the impression that I am trying to profane her, that I am trying to reduce her to some modern literary trope. If you've made it this far and your hackles are starting to rise, that's a completely understandable and human reaction to have. However, I promise that is not what I'm seeking to do. This is something I should be clear about before proceeding any further. Examining the history of the goddess in the modern world does not mean she's made up. It doesn't make her any less real or any less of a goddess. Rather, it means that I am searching for a deeper understanding of how this goddess came to be known and worshipped in this way, at this time, by these people. It means I am looking at how the goddess relates to modern society, which turns out to be quite different from how other goddesses related to other societies. This should come as no surprise, because our world today is definitely not the same as the Mediterranean in 1500 BCE or the Baltic in 600 CE. Why then would the gods look the same way now as they did then, when our civilization is so strikingly different? This book is subtitled A Biography of the Goddess, and that's exactly the project that I see myself undertaking here, a biography. This book is not How the Goddess Was Invented by a Bunch of Victorian Colonialists, nor Nine Reasons the Goddess is Fake and You Should Stop Believing in Her. It is rather the goddess's own personal history, the story of how she came to be where she is today. My purpose is the farthest thing from sacrilege. I am seeking a deeper, richer connection with the divine. I deeply believe that the way...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?